Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here for the next hour on this cloudy, drizzly Saturday afternoon with Tom Hsu doing his second stint of the day.
Oh, I've been here since 7:15 this morning.
Were you doing the music today too?
I was doing the music. I was doing pretty much everything. It was a good day.
Typical day for you.
I probably shouldn't have gone to bed at 2 in the morning, but, you know, whatever.
Well, you were studying up for the toys discussion today, right?
Oh, believe me, I don't need to study for that.
The Encyclopedia of Toys out.
I love toys.
This is a show. Well, first of all, our guest today is Kate Roberts, a senior exhibit developer of the Minnesota Historical Society. Can you hear us yet, Kate?
I can hear you.
Okay, great. Just some of the fun technical pieces of live radio, but this is actually a show I've been looking forward to for a couple months, and Stan had Kate on, I think, back in April, and they were discussing some of the toys that'll be at the current exhibit at the Minnesota History Center called Toys, and Kate, it goes on through when?
It closes January 4th, 2015, so on through the rest of the year.
It's going to be out here a while, but like many of us do, we think we have a lot of time to come see it, and then we forget about it. I've seen it twice, so I think that you may go through it one time. You may want to come back again a second or third time.
Did security have to drag you out of the playroom?
Every time.
I feel like they would.
I mean, there's a part there where you actually can play with toys, and that's the part that I was, you know, the kids were there. I was kind of elbowing them away.
out of my way, short stack.
So you're that guy we've been hearing
yeah,
about.
Yeah, that's probably pictures of me there. This is actually a book also that Kate was a co-author for, and this is actually available in the gift shop. And Kate, tell me a little bit about, was this an exhibit that was close to your heart, or was this something that kind of came to you? Tell me a little about this.
Very much so. We had done an exhibit a few years ago on the year 1968, and it was very popular with a certain demographic, of course, but then we found that it also really reached older and younger visitors, too, who hadn't necessarily lived through the 60s but were so interested in it. So we thought, what can we do that follows up on that interest in mid-century? We thought toys are a perfect way to do that because we all have memories of them. We all have toys we had. We all have toys that we wanted to have. And best of all, they really do reflect their time so clearly. Mm-hmm. So they get people talking, and they make really great personal connections to larger history.
And not to give it away, but when you walk through the exhibit, it's divided pretty well into a 50s living room to a 60s living room with also video with commercials and age-appropriate toys. I enjoyed how much American Western toys and decora in the 50s home. I remember some of this furniture. I'd seen it in older homes before, that the horse couch and the Western lamps. And then again, of course, they're playing with little tin soldiers. And also, I can't remember the toy that I saw that I thought was a chemistry set. It was something I thought, wow, I can't ever picture this being on toy shelves today. There'd be a lot of rules and regulations against that.
With sulfur and acids you could play with.
And it was also was it a sewing kit, and I can't recall what it was, but it was something with very, very sharp pointed edges.
Yeah, you know, safety rules. You know, people were always, of course, interested in product safety, but it's come a long way. And you're absolutely right. You look at some of the 50s and early 60s toys. The one that we really wanted to get for the exhibit that we didn't get was the nuclear atomic kit that Gilbert made for
what?
A while. Yeah. Sort of play with your own atomic energy. I'm not kidding. And they're very hard to find today, but they are out there. And we wanted one for the exhibit. Never were able to locate one. But, yeah, you're right. Toys have evolved, and safety is just one of those.
Is there some sort of, like, radiation actually involved with this nuclear kit?
I bet there was.
This is also an era where you could actually have your hand x-rayed at, like, Donaldson's. And
yeah, there you go.
That was okay,
yes.
Too. I want to play a commercial here. One of the toys that I saw, and I had never seen it, I didn't realize that Mr. Potato Head had a whole family of vegetables that were also part of the Potato Head family. And, you know, some of these toys that were created in the 50s, they weren't just 50s-era toys. They're generational. So they're now the plastic might have changed, might have got harder, might have got cheaper now, but these are timeless toys. This commercial is a vintage Mr. Potato Head commercial from 1960s.
Hasbro. Hasbro makes toys. What's new, Hasbro?
Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head with their own cars and trailers. That's what's new. See, Mr. Potato Head has a car and boat trailer. And there's a car and shopping trailer for his wife, Mrs. Potato Head. It's such fun to do and so easy. Like this. Take any fruit or vegetable. Just stick in eyes, then ears, and then the mouth. You can make the funniest looking people in the whole world. Potato Head people look different every time you make them. Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head with cars and trailers come in $1 and $2 sizes.
What else is new, Hasbro?
A vanity case with toy cosmetics and beautiful accessories and real-looking doctor and nurse kits.
Hasbro makes great toys. It's fun to play with Hasbro.
There we go.
I have to know, what makes Mr. Potato Head such an icon? I mean, he's been probably replaced by hundreds of different toys, but for some reason we can't get away from something as simple as that.
Well, I think, you know, isn't that the case with so many of these classic toys? They're simple. They're really simple. They don't require much more than a simple set of tools. And what I think they really call on is imagination. And that's what really comes through in a lot of these toys, is that when a kid can bring so much more to a toy than what's actually in front of him, that's what makes it a classic. And that's what makes it sing. The fun thing about Mr. Potato Head, of course, and they allude to this in the commercial, is that you used a real potato. And people don't realize that today, I don't think, with the plastic version. But originally, and it was a hard sell, actually, in the era, the post-World War II era of food shortages, it was a hard sell to get people to play with their food and to throw it away. So, but finally, Hasbro went for it. And then, you know, as you mentioned, then there was Mr. Potato Head, there was Mrs. Potato Head, and they were their Tutti Frutti friends.
Well, they still are continuing on. And I was in a shop the other day, and I like Doctor Who, that TV show, and they have Doctor Who potato heads.
There you go. See,
it just keeps going. They do.
Yeah. Okay. And there's the other fascinating thing. If it's a toy that can evolve with the time and can reflect its culture, then that's a classic.
So it is summer, and in most cases, it would be a better day than this. But here is a toy that I recall that everyone had in the garage. I don't think people played it as often as they looked at it, or, of course, were used for the wrong purposes. But jarts. You know what jarts are?
Oh, I have a story about jarts. I'll tell you later.
Does everyone have a story on jarts?
But I'm looking at this.
Probably caused $10,000 worth of damage with a jart.
No way.
I was in my friend's backyard. We were playing with it for the first time. I threw it up. And it came down straight into the middle of his pool, popped the tarp that's down there.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think they had to replace the entire thing.
Oh, my gosh. That tops any jart story we've heard so far.
I felt a little bad. I don't think I ever went back.
To those that do not know what a jart is a dart, which here's the genius idea behind this. You bring your friends over with, let's say, some, as we say, Tom, here, spirits, okay? Have some spirits, grill some hot dogs, and then throw this metal pointed tip. It was very heavy, actually.
Yes.
At full force into a yellow ring in your very small backyard. And somehow we thought this was a great thing to do. And there was in the, you know, the overreaching government of ours told us not to sell these anymore.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Product safety became a thing, specifically toy safety in the late 60s. It was under President Nixon that the first toy safety regulations were introduced. And then finally in 1988... jarts were outlawed.
No, are they banned to have them, or are they banned just to sell them? Because I think they're
banned to sell. That's correct, okay. Tom. Because people do still have them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you know, I don't think you can still sell them on eBay though.
Can
I'm
you play
sure.
with them?
You,
and be illegal.
We certainly can. Oh, and be illegal. I don't think so.
Huh?
I think you can. I think you're safe if you own them. I think you can still
it's
be playing.
It's just
with
up
them.
To you if you want to play that game.
Exactly.
I'm looking at the. You guys remember the? Of course, Tom, you remember this. The you pull the string on a little wheel, and then you know the calluses move.
Oh yeah.
I saw this at the exhibit. The Dr. Doolittle says turn. We might have to find a body for this one because this
oh,
is.
Oh, that's great.
This is. You know, you used to have the one the farmer says, where the you know the chicken says.
Yeah, and that's the original, right? The farmer says, and then they started packaging them to go along with the hit movies, hit TV shows, like you say. So Dr. Doolittle, I think, came out in '67.
And then also, what else did I see here? The big wheel.
Yes.
And this big wheel, this is the same, you know, shape of big wheel that every young boy and even girl had for, again, you know, 30, 40 years.
Exactly. Sort of the inverted trike.
The car type of deal?
Yeah, the little, so you're sitting low with the big front wheel, so you feel like you're riding a chopper. You got your little kitty Harley in front of you.
Oh, good times.
Mm-hmm. They're great. That's a classic.
Let's pull up one here. This is also another toy. I'm going to see if we can recognize what this is.
Who walks the stair without a care and makes the happiest sound? Bounce up and down just like a clown. Everyone knows it's Linky. The best present yet to give or get. The favorite all over town. The hit of the day when you're ready to play. Everyone knows it's Linky. It's Linky, it's Linky. For fun is the best of the toys. It's Linky, it's Linky. The favorite of girls and boys. Everyone wants a Slinky. You ought to get a Slinky.
And boys and girls, more fun with Slinky Pull Toys. Slinky Caterpillar, Slinky Train, Slinky Hippopotamus. Everyone wants a Slinky Pull Toy.
You know, I have a Slinky in my desk at the, you know, the mill I work at during the week, and it keeps my mind sharp when I can play the Slinky during the day.
What's the Slinky Train? What are those?
Well, it's a front and a back of a train, and in between, it's a Slinky.
Oh, no kidding.
So, yep. There was, if you remember the Toy Story movie, too, remember the Slinky dog
that's
in there?
Right,
do you guys
that's
remember
right.
that? Yeah. So all sorts of things you could make with those. And, oh, and I want to tell folks, too, because I'm sure you did this when you were in the exhibit, Tom. We've got Slinky stairs, so you can practice your Slinky skills with a friend. You can have a race down the stairs. We engineered them to sort of maximize your success. They don't work every time, but, boy, it sure is fun trying. And I think our apologies to everybody now. They're going to have that stuck in their head the rest of the day.
No, we want to know. They listen to it on Flashback Twin Cities. That's where they want to hear that song today. This is a doll I saw, and I'm still taken aback by sometimes the non-politically correct toys.
Yes,
Poor Pitiful Pearl.
Yeah.
Now, tell me a little bit about this.
This is a fascinating doll. I was not aware of this, and I'm the demographic for her, but I don't remember Poor Pitiful Pearl. We became aware of her because we did a pretty successful media campaign, social media campaign, and asked people to share their stories. And we got a great story, a great memory about Poor Pitiful Pearl. She's based on a cartoon by William Steig. If you don't know that name, you know the Shrek movie. He was the cartoonist behind that. But he also did this little booklet about Poor Pitiful Pearl, who sold with two outfits. One sad little patched outfit, no shoes, and then one beautiful party dress. And the idea is that the little girl can transform her with a bath, with a hairbrush, with some ironing or clothes, can transform her from poor and pitiful, which, as you say, Tom, is a little bit short of PC
today. I don't think that would work today.
It's a makeover. You're absolutely right. It's a makeover.
Another doll that is staying the test of time. Let's play this audio here, Tom.
Barbie, you're beautiful. You make me feel. My Barbie doll is really real. Barbie's small and so petite. Her clothes and figure look so neat. Her dancing outfit rings the bell. At parties she will cast a spell. Purses, hats, and gloves galore. And all the gadgets gals adore.
Barbie dressed for swim and fun is only $3. Her lovely fashions range from $1 to $5. Look for Barbie wherever dolls are sold.
Someday I'm gonna be exactly like you. Till then I know just what I'll do. Barbie, beautiful Barbie.
What year did Barbies come out?
1959. Yeah. Yeah,
it was the first ever Barbie commercial, and it was actually the first year Barbie came out.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Barbie exhibit because it looked like a fun party that the Barbie and Kens were at. you can see the Barbie; these are vintage Barbie and Ken dolls, and they're having a really, I don't use the term loosely, a really swinging party. They're having a good.
Well,
time.
Well, that's exactly our designer came up with that idea, and that's what he called it, was a Barbie party. Yeah. So you can see Barbie, Skipper, Ken, of course, all of their friends together at a party. And like you say, it's a little bit swinging. Mm-hmm, you know, they're mm-hmm. just, they're having a little bit of fun. But Barbie, you know, we couldn't do the exhibit or the book without Barbie.
Right.
Of course. And, you know, she has a really interesting backstory as, you know, originally meant to be a career woman for mm-hmm. girls. And it's fascinating to look at her very early history.
I remember reading about that. I mean, mm-hmm. it was originally a German doll that was taken
yes.
by the maker and turned into an American doll. And she insisted that Barbie have breasts because no other doll at the time had that.
Mm-hmm.
They thought it would be
right.
a great role model for children to be able to
yeah.
see a successful woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and not
that's
a child.
Absolutely right. Not a child, a successful single woman with a car, with a career, etc.
It's weird to think now that, I mean, obviously it's not a good role model for children now, but back then it was a wall-breaking thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and Barbie's been it's been a controversy from, you know, probably from the start. And different era has a different controversy on what, you know, what image does this portray? Is it right? Is it wrong? You know, we had the talking Barbie, of course, was a big to-do in the 1990s
yeah.
and what Barbie should say and not say.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, through all that, it has endured. Even yes. there's been even through competitors and have come and gone. Mattel has found they found something right with Barbie.
Absolutely, and she's changed with the times. You're absolutely right. She still has a tremendous following today.
One more doll before we go to a commercial break here, and this is one. Now you guys can get upset with me, but this is one I've never really found the fascination for. You know, when you see old toys and you kind of had like ugh, you kind of get a little bit of a start. This is one. There was a period of time when I was a young where this kind of had a resurgence,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't get it. Troll dolls. Help
oh,
me out
sure.
here. Tom, you might have a collection of these.
I do not, but I have read plenty of trivia books, and troll dolls were part of it.
Help me out here. These were from the 60s, correct? These
right. Mm-hmm. And I'll speak up in favor of trolls because I did have a collection. It was actually my older sister's collection, but I got to play with it too. I think a couple of things. I mean, one, fads are inexplicable,
mm-hmm.
you know, and trolls were a true fad, and who knows why they come and why they go. But the other thing about them, I think, was that they were so ugly, they were cute. They were kind of like bulldogs. You know, the ugly cute doll. And if you were like me and like my sisters, and we weren't big doll kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, we didn't have Barbies. We didn't do that. We loved our trolls because they had the little outfits. They had the fun little backstories. They had a lot of the things that other dolls had, but they were quirky.
Well, you know what? I'm obviously in the minority because troll dolls are still around. And, you know.
It was marketed to you at one point. During the 90s, they had an action troll TV series where they were superheroes that fought crime and that kind of thing.
Like, are you serious?
I am
this
dead
is
serious.
News to me.
I
That's
must have been busy watching
one.
Something else.
Oh, yeah. They had like gems in their chest that would fire like magic.
No,
out.
I remember.
That is great.
I remember sitting at lunch. This is back in that period of time in the 90s where someone had a troll doll one day. I thought, that's kind of odd. They brought that to school. And then about a month later, everyone was into trolls again.
Mm-hmm.
My sister loved them.
Yeah. Yeah, like any good fad. Yep.
That's right. Okay, we'll come back. Actually, there's some more great fads to talk about, and some other toys which are 30, 40 plus years old on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB Club 1220. Okay, let's look at the Slinky commercial. We'll stick with that. I'd rather be haunted by that all day than the troll commercial, the troll intro. Okay. So, in case kids, you want to watch Stone Protectors?
The Stone Protectors, talking about toys evolving over time to try to meet new demographics. You got your action, karate, chopping trolls, fighting crime.
There you go. And you know what?
I love it.
Back to party games. We you know talk about jars, talk about Barbie's swinging party. Also, a game that's needed at any party is Twister. And Twister, well, I'm not going to read that quote right here, but well, okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sex in a box.
Yeah.
That's how Twister's critics labeled the groundbreaking game that for the first time placed players of the opposite sex in close and often provocative contact with one another. Introduced in 1966, as the nation began to feel a loosening of the moral constrictions in the 1950s, Twister was the right game at the right time, and I love the picture on the actual old box. I think there's one one girl, and there's three guys, two girls. They're having a merry old time there.
That they are. And, you know, we forget this, or I never knew it about Twister, that it did have that sort of negative connotation when it first came out. The funny thing about Twister, oh, incidentally, there's a Minnesota connection to Twister, too.
This is correct.
Which is really fun. It's the patent was held by two Minnesotans. It was originated by a company as sort of a toy, an advertising campaign for shoes. But then the company, the local company went and thought, well, no, we've really got a toy here, and marketed it. And eventually Charles Foley and Neil Rabens got the patent.
Up with some Twister audio, Tom. I got some right here.
Get you all twisted and tangled, it's the Twister. Spin the spinner and call the shop. Twister ties you up in a knot. That's Twister. Yeah, Twister.
Right foot blue.
Right foot blue.
Left hand red.
Left hand red.
Left.
Right.
Yellow.
Blue.
Green.
Yeah, Twister. You gotta play Twister in your stocking feet.
There you go.
That's pretty fabulous. The other thing that's fun about that, too, is what the company had the genius to get it on The Tonight Show, and Johnny Carson played it with Ava Gabor. And that's when sales really went wild.
That would do it.
That would do it, huh?
Not bad for something that I think it wasn't sold for years in Sears. Like, they refused to carry it.
Yes, yes.
Because it was that
that's
sex
right,
in a box.
Because of the sex in a box label, yeah, that stuck with it for quite a while.
Goodness, goodness, goodness. One, I enjoyed seeing this a lot. This is so the Play family was what was referred to as the little people. These are the people that had
those are the little people,
the barn. You know, the barn is a pretty iconic, the school, the house, you fold it up and you have the little people. One of the most, you know, one of the fascinating pieces was the Play family castle, and it has a purple
dragon. Yep.
Thank you. Tell me about this toy.
Well, it's fun. You know, Fisher-Price, like you say, Fisher-Price had been making these little people, small, very simple wooden characters since the late 50s, I think 1959. But there's something about the Play family castle. They brought it out in 74. It was only made for 3 years. And it's iconic. People look at that and either they had it or they wanted it. But either way, they're drawn to that in the exhibit. And a lot of it is, I think, that adorable dragon. And all the fun sort of, you know, we talked earlier about these iconic toys that really foster imagination. And that's another one where it's got all of these little trap doors and various other things that you can play with that for hours and not be bored.
I always wanted that. I never had
there you
it,
go.
But I wanted it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a genius of design, really. And it's something that Fisher-Price is, of course, known for. They did a lot of product testing very early on. They were one of the first companies to actually do empirical testing with kids.
Well, and also, those the little people as we knew them, those are no longer produced anymore. They were deemed too small for children, which is, I mean, it's fortunate because you don't want children. But wasn't there a book that came out and really targeted Fisher-Price little people as
You're
one of
right
the most,
that,
most dangerous,
yeah.
dangerous toys?
Yeah, which is a shame. You're right, because, I mean, I get it too. I understand safety regulations, but they are iconic, and they were a great toy for learning and for fostering imagination.
And then Play School, they tried to do another version of this, and they're people a little more square and boxy looking. But I saw this at the McDonald's restaurant.
Yeah, Play School came out with a Familiar Places set, and there was a Howard Johnson Hotel. I think there was a Texaco gas station, and then there was the McDonald's. So we were lucky enough to find a McDonald's set, and we collected a great memory from a woman to go along with it. But yeah, what people always talk about with those Play School sets is that the characters had square heads. So if you remember them, and they actually carry their little McDonald's trays and their little square arms, so they're awfully cute.
How did you get all this stuff? Did you
well,
buy it or donation?
That's a good question. Both. We got some donations. We got some great lenders willing to do. And then we were able to buy some things. We also have quite a bit in our collection already. You know, we do have a pretty massive collection at the Historical Society. So pretty much just a full speed ahead. If we got a great story, then we went to find the toy to go with it.
Let's actually have a commercial here I want to play. This is actually another favorite toy that everyone's going to remember.
Light Right, the toy that lets you create beautiful pictures with light.
Light Right, making things with light.
Work with colorful pegs that glow with light, light bulb not included. Make people, animals, things, and with refills, Bugs Bunny or Bozo the Clown.
Light Right, making things with light.
You can make lots of pretty pictures with Light Bright from Hasbro.
You know, Light Bright, great toy. I always seem to recall Light Bright. It's one of those toys where you get it for Christmas, you make one or two, and then you really don't do anything with it ever again.
Thank you for that. You know, I have to say there are people, many people, who see the Light Bright in our exhibit and have said just that same thing, Tom. I loved it. I wanted it. I got it. And then I played with it for a while. So it's funny. You know, and then there are other people. Now we're going to hear from everybody who loved their Light Brights and played with it all the time.
Well, if there's someone who wants to call in, 651-275-1220, and tell me they play Light Bright every week,
but
I'd love to hear from
it. It is one of those things, you know, the aspirational toy, the toy you just had to have. I think Light Bright is way high on that
list. Well, we were talking last time we talked off air. I think you and Stan were talking about this. Mm-hmm. And this is a game that I saw. I want to play this commercial here, and then I want to talk about my own personal story with this game.
Oh, good, good, good. And this is the very first one.
Yes.
The wildest, funniest game you've ever seen.
Mousetrap!
Catch the mouse, that's half the fun. But there's even more to playing Mousetrap game. Here's where the fun begins. Move two spaces, one, two. Start building the mousetrap. Race your mouse around the board, building a mousetrap as you go. Then comes the funniest part of Mousetrap game.
Unlike Twister, which you take a box out and you take the tarp out and you're playing a game in about 5 minutes, Mousetrap, this is a game that myself and many got over the years, and you took about an hour and a half to set it up because, just to give you a little bit of background, it's a very intricate game. You have a lot of plastic pieces and you roll. It's kind of a, how to describe it, but you start, you roll a ball, and then all these mechanics in it start working. Now, that's great. The commercial looks like it's very easy to set up. It's very easy to play Mousetrap because eventually the mouse gets trapped in this little net. I have the game still because I think when I was about 7 years old, I thought that maybe I just didn't know what I was doing. But chances are, after our conversation we had a couple months ago and talking to others at the exhibit, no one actually figured out a way to get that game to work.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think that's what is so funny about that game. Everyone wanted it, and I think we all played with it probably pretty happily. But if you tried to play the game where you actually did have to make everything work, it could be pretty frustrating.
Oh, exactly. I just bought that last year for my nephew's sixth birthday. And I don't think like you said, I've never known anyone who played it by the rules. We all just set the mouse under the net and made everything flip around and twirl and drop.
Well, after an hour and a half, who wants to then play a game with rules after that point? And then
rules.
You have to take it apart. And it's also a game that if you lose one piece that, then the game's ruined.
Exactly. That's the other thing. And, of course, that's the genius of that game and so many others. Then you have to buy the replacement game, right? So.
Oh, that's a shame.
It was great to see Lincoln Logs. It was great to see the letter elf, the alphabet block.
Yes.
And those of course, were iconic. The play school, I think it's play school, the colored blocks, mm-hmm. and those are the same blocks that everyone had.
Yes.
Gumby and Pokey, everyone had that. In the 70s, and this is kind of, as someone who was born in the 70s, I usually don't reveal my age in this show, but we'll give you a little bit of context.
Every week.
I never have. I was really, that was kind of where I was in heaven, and one of the, I saw, you know, toward the Vietnam era, you know, the G.I. Joe toys were, you know, it was tough to kind of celebrate war at that point. And Mattel and other companies were trying to create other action figures that were – they were not military-based. Even – I mean, you go back to the 50s, tin soldiers, you know, little soldiers. That's what people celebrated and played with. Action Jackson, Big Jim, these were figures that were celebrating adventure but not with a gun. And I have a commercial here for – it's Mego's Action Jackson.
Action Jackson is my name. Bold adventure is my game. Think of what you'd want to be, then call on me.
I want to be a frogman.
Action Jackson.
Action Jackson.
An Aussie Marine.
Action Jackson.
A firefighter.
Action Jackson. Action Jackson is my name. Bold adventure is my game.
Jungle Safari.
Action Jackson adventure outfits.
Action Jackson.
All sold separately.
Action Jackson.
By Mego.
No weapons.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because that's one of the – I mean, when you talk about toys reflecting the larger culture, this rise of action figures and then – them becoming, like you say, increasingly adventure team stars without weapons is fascinating to me. And Mego, you know, took that to the extreme, as you know. They became very well known for their bendable action figures. And it's a great trajectory to sort of see how G.I. Joe comes out in 1964 and he's, you know, the four branches of the military are represented. Mm-hmm. And then fairly quickly, I mean, within just a short period of a few years, he kind of goes underground and then comes back himself as part of an adventure team. Mm-hmm. And then, as you say, Mego and others are definitely then leading the pack and kind of taking it from there.
Was there a point that G.I. Joe was done? Was there a point they were done? In the, I know they came back in a smaller was it 6-inch
yes.
or
3-quarters? And then eventually 3-1/4-inch, yep. Yeah. Or 3 3/4, yep. I think. You can still get G.I. Joes today. They've never completely gone away, but they, more than many other toys, have transformed themselves.
Well, and I'm talking about in the 70s, when the G.I. Joe and large G.I. Joe figures were dormant. They, mm-hmm. Was there a period of time where they were just done?
Yes.
And, okay, they were.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
And replaced by the smaller figures. And again, you think about, well, why did that happen? Many reasons, but in one, because we had an oil embargo at that point, and plastic got very expensive, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And toys shrunk.
Mego is interesting. Mego was a big action figure manufacturer, and as a comic book guy myself, and, mm-hmm. I always found it fascinating. That is the company that had every TV show and toy line. They had it. They had a license to it. Mm-hmm. But also, they probably overproduced a lot of action figures.
You know, they really might have. But my gosh, I mean, they were a giant in the industry.
And the biggest fatal error they made, which a lot of people will point to, is there was this movie that came out in 1977 that they turned down the action figure line to.
Yes.
And I'm going to play a commercial from this. This is where we get to my favorite part of the show today. Wait for it.
Star Wars. You and your children loved it. Now the Earthlings at Kenner have asked my associate and me to present the Star Wars collection. Truly remarkable toys and games for your children. What are you so excited about now? My goodness, the Star Wars TIE Fighter and X-Wing Fighter. Now your children can relive our great space battles or collect our wonderful Star Wars companions with Kenner's Star Wars action figures. R2, it's a little you. Kenner's new radio-controlled R2-D2 anyone can command. The Star Wars land speeder that moves like it's floating. And here's Kenner's Death Star space station, 4 floors of action, a trash compactor, too. Listen, R2, that's the Star Wars electronic laser battle, a game of speed, reflex, and reaction. These and other toys and games in Kenner's Star Wars collection are sold separately.
The Minnesota Connection, General Mills, which our local corporation, owned a small toy outfit in Ohio called Kenner Products, which to that point was Easy Bake Ovens and a very small Spirograph.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenner really changed action figures forever, really, with this toy line.
They did. You're absolutely right. This is the first... you know, smaller 3-inch figure. And the interesting thing about that, too, you talked about Mego passing on it, which I'm sure somewhere out there there's still a retired executive kicking him or herself every day for that decision. But the other interesting thing about Kenner then was that they could not keep up with the demand. And your listeners might know this and might remember this and have experienced it themselves.
The early bird kit?
Yeah, the early bird kit. If you wanted that for Christmas, you opened the box and you got a piece of paper, an early bird kit, with the promise of the figures coming later because they simply couldn't keep up with the demand.
This movie was not expected to do well.
Exactly.
And George Lucas, to his credit, he's made some decisions I don't agree with,
but
financial decisions he seems to do pretty well with. And one of his financial decisions was he was going to get a cut from the toy sales, and Kenner did pretty well with those toy sales.
Yeah, I'll say.
Well, in the early bird kit, picture this: you're a young kid, and you get for Christmas not a toy, you get a big envelope saying you're going to get toys in 3 months.
Yeah. Think about that. We actually have a story in the book from somebody remembering that, and it's kind of funny if I can find it quickly.
Were kids excited to get, you know, an IOU? Like, they knew it was coming.
I can't imagine. Yeah. So I don't remember now. This is William Becker writing this. I don't remember now if I was disappointed at not receiving actual toys, but I do remember spending hours staring at the drawings of the action figures on the background of the cardboard display.
That's right.
And dreaming about what it would be like to have all the figures, which is so poignant today.
Now, if you ever do an exhibit, let me know. I'll give you some really great pieces for that exhibit.
Thank you. We might be calling you for that. Because, you know, those are hard to find. As you know, those are very collectible.
And I might have one or two. But
are they still in the box?
Well, there's some of them still in the box.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Retirement fund.
Uh-huh.
Hey, between the radio and this, you know, let's take a break here. Actually, some more great toys I want to talk to Kate with, and we'll be back here on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with Kate Roberts, Senior Exhibit Developer. Kate, I'm sorry I haven't mentioned your name more
That's
often.
That's all right.
This book, which is written by Kate Roberts and Adam Scher,
mm-hmm.
Great book. If you have not picked up your copy of this, when you go down to the Toy Exhibit, which I encourage you, it's a rainy day today, go down to the Minnesota History Center. It's a great Saturday afternoon. You can have lunch there. Go up. It takes, you know, it's about maybe an hour, hour and a half mm-hmm. to go through the exhibit, depending how fast you want to do. And if you're like me, you'll sit and play with toys, and you might be there 3 or 4 hours.
Which is great. And I should say the book's available through Amazon, et cetera, too. So widely available.
It's a great book. We gave a few away on Stan Turner's All Request Show, and I could just sit there and read that for probably hours.
Do you have any left?
Okay. No, unfortunately.
Well, you got one more now today. You can use this one.
Oh, this is great.
Hooray, yeah. But Tom's going to take it from me.
He will take it, won't he?
But my motives are already crystal clear, aren't they? Okay. We talked about fads and talked about, in the digital era, we're all looking for what's our next great app, what's the next great thing. Here's someone that decided that, you know what, I got a big rock garden in the back. I'm going to put this in a box and call my pet rock.
Yeah. This is Gary Dahl from California. And my gosh, you know, 1975, he had the idea that we all wish we could have, the pet rock. And you're right, he just went and he bought a carload of rocks, packaged them very cleverly in a little box with breathing holes and Excelsior for a comfortable little bed, and then wrote what is honestly a very funny little instruction kit with care and feeding instructions, you know, put a ticking clock by them at night so they aren't nervous being alone, et cetera, et cetera. It's quite funny. And he made a small fortune on that. It was only, I think, 6 months maybe on the store shelves, but that was enough to set him up for life.
That was enough. There was that Tom will appreciate. There was a kryptonite version of that. Someone had thought it, Warner DC, you know, let's sell a kryptonite rock that Superman would be repelled by, which was funny because the box had Superman on it. You buy this green rock, and then there's my kryptonite.
That's brilliant.
That is brilliant.
And again, I might have sold for 5 months, but we hope someone made some money. And,
mm-hmm.
and
my parents bought them.
There you go.
I know they have.
Yep.
They regret it.
Like so many other things. Here's
$3.95, so pretty affordable.
Oh, yeah.
This is one I don't regret. And in fact, I can remember just pushing his buttons, I could tell you what the voice was. And Speak and Spell.
Yes.
This was Texas Instruments, which was at the time a calculator company, mm-hmm. a computer company. And, you know, really, you know, between Simon and these electronic toys, this was really taken off in the late 70s. Mm-hmm. And the two toys which I both had and I really appreciate seeing was The Little Professor and Speak and Spell. And tell me a little bit about Speak and Spell.
Well, what I find interesting about Speak and Spell is that, you know, because it's Texas Instruments making this, it's not the sort of Chatty Cathy recorded phrase mm-hmm. voice. It's digitized voice technology, very early technology that TI was developing. So it has that distinctive sound that people remember. It's a very different delivery method for the voice. And it was just great. I mean, Speak and Spell, as you say, you could have fun with it. You could type in nonsense and it would try to figure out what you were trying to spell, or you could do it right. But either way, it's kind of a genius toy. And remember, do you want to, or should I talk about the link to a certain 1982 movie?
I was going to say the technology in this game. Well, let's play commercial.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Once a child wants to spell, the spell is cast. Speak and Spell from Texas Instruments.
That is correct.
With snap-in modules with hundreds more words for growing minds.
You are right.
Speak and Spell, part of a family of products for richer tomorrows from the Learning Center of Texas Instruments. Because a child's tomorrow is never just...
To an unsuspecting public, this device also had technology that could speak to other worlds.
There you go.
In 1982, E.T., remember that movie? If you recall, the big way E.T. was able to communicate to phone home was not through a telephone. He hooked up a Speak and Spell to a aluminum foil and a satellite dish.
Yeah, he's got all this kind of, this sort of semi-low, semi-high-tech stuff, and then he pulls the Speak and Spell out. It's a charming moment. I watch it now, and it's still a great, great combination of pop culture and tugging at your heartstrings.
Yeah, and again, if you ever – here's some trivia for you guys, you know, for tonight. When you ask how E.T. phoned home, with a Speak and Spell.
Yes. See and if anybody remembers that.
These were – you know, these are sophisticated toys too. These weren't – you know, we're moving beyond toys that are made of plastic. I mean, these are
– Yeah.
And they weren't inexpensive either.
That's right. We're moving into – you know, the Texas Instruments logo on that would automatically, I think, tell the buyer that they're getting a very quality toy. They can command a little higher price than some of the other companies, and they weren't cheap. You're absolutely right.
All right, Tom, one more commercial for the 70s electronic toys.
Johnny, he's going to play Simon.
Nobody beats Simon.
I want you, Simon.
Simon is the challenge you've been waiting for because it
takes... I'll just tough on that one, but there's apparently a guy named Simon who is the Master Simon champion. And when I played Simon at the exhibit, I had to go the very slow speed level one.
Right there, too.
Yeah, I know. I had one most of my life, but it's been a while since I've been in active Simon competition.
Yeah, thank you, because I'm right there, too. And I have to tell you, you'd think maybe I'd be tired of this topic and tired, but I have to say... I hang out in the gallery and I do play that Simon game myself because it's just fun.
It's fun. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's one of the toys that just frustrates me.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like I always am envious of the people like yourself who enjoy it and I try it and I'm terrible at patterns.
But doesn't it bring you back? Don't you keep trying to do it? And that's the thing about that. It's you want to do it even as it frustrates you. That's a great game and it was designed by... here's another little bit of trivia. Ralph Baer, who's a pretty well-known name in those toy circles. He's alive today. He's in his 90s. And he had another career as a engineering contractor. But then he was also very interested in toys. And he's the man behind the Magnavox Odyssey, so the first home mm-hmm. video console in 1972. And then he went on and played an Atari pinball. Well, not pinball. An Atari game that was similar to Simon and then figured out a home version of that.
You know, one couple of the toys I got to mention before we run out of time here, the Nerf ball. The Nerf ball started out as one foam ball in 1970,
yeah.
Correct? And
correct.
Look what that franchise has.
Yeah, think about that. And I was just talking to somebody about that the other day. If you say Nerf to a child today, it means a whole different thing. Yes, exactly. Yeah, we're making little rifle gestures. But in 1970, Nerf was a safe ball that you could throw in the house. And we actually have in the exhibit, we have a Nerf garage where you can throw balls at walls, et cetera. If they happen to hit someone else, of course, they don't injure them because they're Nerf balls.
Was the Snoopy snowcone machine at the exhibit? Did I miss that? Is that there too?
Nope.
Okay, but that's another one that makes you think of that period.
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
Nerf ball, and then there was one more toy I had to bring up before we go, and while I'm thinking about that. Well, Schwinn bicycles. Tonka trucks. Every kid had a Tonka truck, and these Tonka trucks lasted from sandbox to sandbox. I think they just make them in plastic now. I don't think they are metal any longer.
Yeah.
Lincoln Logs. I don't think Lincoln Logs should be plastic. I really got a big issue with that.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you still, you can get wooden sets, certainly. You can get the vintage wooden sets, and there is something about it. They even have that smell. As so many toys, have their iconic smells, and the Lincoln Log is one of them.
I remember it was the Grand Hotel and the shaven bath that you'd build on the Lincoln Log. That was the signs you'd put up on the little houses. Green roofs and orange roofs.
Wow, you were a Lincoln Log aficionado.
I was a Lincoln Logger.
You were. And another one of those timeless toys, and Lincoln Logs actually predate the 50s. But they're one of those toys that kept coming back, and I think 50s parents who had played with them as children in the 30s and 40s brought them back for their kids.
All right, Kate, after all these toys, what's your favorite one? If you had to pick either one you played with or one that you just found most fascinating.
I keep going back to the Spirograph. Mm-hmm. I did love that Spirograph. I loved it as a kid. I still love it today. I think if you remember what that was, it was the interlocking wheels. They still make them today, but they're not as cool as the 60s versions. And you could make these really intricate designs and patterns. And what's great about it, I think, is that, if you aspire to being an artsy kid and you're really not, it's the perfect thing for you because you can't lose. So what about yours? What's your favorite?
Well, I think the Star Wars toys, but also the Star Wars toys and the electronic toys.
Yeah.
And the Simon, the Texas Instruments. Yeah. This was an era with we didn't have home computers. We didn't have home computers really until the 90s. And, most people didn't have a computer. So the Speak and Spell, Speak and Read, that was the closest to a computer that a lot of people were ever going to have, or the Little Professor. And it was a great way to be able to test yourself. I remember a grade school teacher of mine said, you don't bring toys to school, but he encouraged bringing the Little Professor to school because
interesting.
He said that because he goes, if you want to learn your multiplication tables, division tables, bring the Little Professor in.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. So a toy that's okay to bring to school. Yeah, and what about you, Tom? What's your favorite?
I have a combination of toys. Tinker Toys for Life.
Yes.
Love Tinker Toys, and they're kind of hard to find now, which really disappoints me. I made roller coasters and towers out of those things. I was huge into He-Man and wrestling toys to get my aggression out there.
Mm-hmm.
And just thinking of the G.I. Joe thing, that was a beautiful and intelligent cross-production because Sergeant Slaughter was a wrestler, and he was a G.I. Joe. And they would have occasional G.I. Joes that were wrestlers like that.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Big Boss Man, I think, might have been a G.I. Joe.
All kinds of ways to get us to spend our money, right?
They were brilliant.
I remember those ask you, both of you. Cootie. Remember this game?
Yes.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Here's a question for Cootie. I also had a Cootie set, but I never remember playing the game Cootie, but I remember making the Cooties.
Never played the game myself.
Okay, good. I'm not just alone on
no.
that.
No, and in
tried
fact,
it once.
Yeah, in the exhibit, we actually blew up the instruction page and put it next to it because we thought this will be interesting for people to know that there actually were game rules.
In fact, the friend I went with, same story. We had the game. We just didn't. Mm-hmm. We just thought it was kind of funny to make these little ant things.
Yeah.
We didn't. Easy Bake Oven. This is also still being sold today. I'm looking at a 1963 Easy Bake Oven with a lot of metal and a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever tasted food out of Easy Bake Oven?
Oh, you bet. At slumber parties when I was a kid, we'd make our little,
Was it any good? I've never had anything from there.
Edible.
It was edible.
I'm
still here today.
We have to figure it's better now than it was 40 years ago, but maybe it's the same chocolate cakes. So again, Minnesota History Center through January...
January 4th, 2015. So, yep. But get over there soon.
It's a great thing. Hey, today's raining. And are you open Saturdays and Sundays?
Saturdays and Sundays, yep. Free on Tuesday nights.
Okay.
So please come visit us early and often. We'll be there.
And go throw Nerf balls at people in the garage.
Yes, exactly. And try those slinky skills.
The book is Toys. Kate Roberts is at the Minnesota History Center gift shop. I encourage you to check it out. Kate, looking forward to having you back again.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been fun.
This is Flash by Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here. Till next week on KLBB Club 1220.